Welcome to the program Old Testament Prophets with Father Mitch Pacwa.
Shalom, shalom aleichem. The peace of God be with you. My name is Father Mitchell Pacwa, and I'm a Jesuit priest, and I'm a professor of Old Testament at Loyola University in Chicago. In the series on the prophet Isaiah, we've been looking at the various oracles the prophet gives against the nations. And in general, these oracles come at a time of international crisis. At a time when the people of Philistia, especially the city of Ashdod, okay, which is just over to the southwest of Israel, those people had started a revolt against the king of Assyria. He didn't like it, all right? It's not nice to fool the king of Assyria. And so he comes down and he's going to attack and, as a matter of fact, wipe out the city of Ashdod. But at the same time, other countries are also in rebellion, and there's a lot of international crisis going on at this time. And that's where Isaiah comes in. So open up to chapter 18 of the book of the prophet Isaiah. And we're going to see here how the prophet Isaiah really has a lot of concern about what is going on an international level. So he says here, Hoy, Eretz Tzilzal Kenefayim. Woe to you, land. And then the Tzilzal Kenefayim, what does that mean? Do you know? Probably not. I don't either. There's a problem with it because it's two possibilities. Okay? The words Tzilzal Kenefayim can mean the buzzing of wings. Okay? Because there's a word that means buzzing, and it could refer to the tsetse fly. As a matter of fact, the word is very similar to it, Tzilzal. And it could be the tsetse fly that is very common and spreads all kind of disease down in Ethiopia and Egypt. Okay, that's one possibility. So he's saying, you land of buzzing flies that bring disease. It's not a nice way to talk about people. Then there's another word, tsultsul. And tsultsul also means a boat in Arabic. So we could have here boats of wings, that is, boats with sails on them. I think that's what's going on here. He's talking about boats of wings, that is, sailboats. And what's coming? They come down from the rivers of Ethiopia. Ethiopia, who sends ambassadors by the sea and in vessels of papyrus upon the waters. Go, you swift messengers. Now, here we see Ethiopia, which is south of Egypt, but which was allied with Egypt. And it's sending ambassadors to the king of Judah so as to get the king of Judah to join in a revolt against Assyria. Now, these vessels of papyrus were small boats made out of papyrus reeds that were dried and tied together. And these were very swift boats. And they could really glide across the top of the Nile, swiftly going even down the rapids that separate Egypt from Ethiopia. And these very tall, black, dignified Ethiopians come down from Egypt and all the way through Egypt to Judah. And as a matter of fact, Isaiah is impressed with them. He says, a nation that is tall and has shiny skin, you know, glossy skin, that these black people have, you know, very beautiful skin, and they're very handsome people. And he goes to a people who were all terrible, fearful, from the very beginning onward. A nation that is strong, that treads down. So these Ethiopians are strong guys, tough guys. And they're offering themselves to become allies of Judah. So that looks good. But what does the Lord say to these people? Not only to the Ethiopians, but in verse 3, to all you inhabitants of the world. all you people who live on the world, that a sign is lifted up on the mountains for you, and all you're going to see this sign. And when you hear it, you're going to hear a horn blow. Now this seems to refer to the day of judgment, the day of the Lord, for all the nations, not just the Ethiopians. And the Lord's word to the Ethiopian ambassadors who want to have a revolt against Assyria, the Lord's word has said, look, I keep myself quiet. Let me keep myself quiet. And let me look from my dwelling place. Okay? Let me look on it. Okay? And let me be quiet and still. And like the clear heat in sunshine, and like a cloud of dew in the heat of the harvest. For before the harvest, when the blossom is ripe, and the bud becomes a ripening grape, he will cut off the sprigs with pruning hooks, and the shoots he will lop off. What's he saying there? He's saying, look, let me just sort of be quiet and watch and see and wait. I'll take care of the Assyrians. You Ethiopian ambassadors don't have to do much. I don't need you to do this. I'll take care of it. So let me be doing this slowly and quietly, because I, the Lord, rule quietly. Okay? And then when I come about, I will cut off the branches and the roots and all that. That is, I will destroy the Assyrians, who are compared to a tree in blossom. I'll see them ripen and see their bad fruit come out. And I'll take care of it, and then they'll die. And as a matter of fact, he says, they'll be left to the birds of the air and the beasts of the earth. The birds of the air who eat, you know, carnivore birds, like buzzards, okay? So the buzzards will summer upon them. That is, the buzzards will have all summer long to pick out their eyeballs and eat all their flesh off their skin and all that stuff. And the beasts of the earth will have all winter long to pull on the bones and eat that stuff. So don't worry about whether you're going to take care of the Assyrians or not. I'll do that. So the Lord is saying that He is the one that will ultimately bring punishment upon the nations that deserve it. Their fruit is rotten, so the Lord will take care of them. He'll punish them for their rotten fruit and cut it off, not us. Then we see finally in verse 7, just a little note, that also, just to keep you in mind, you Ethiopians are going to bring tribute to Jerusalem. You know, as a matter of fact, there still are quite a few thousand Ethiopian Jews. And the rest of the Ethiopians are Christians. So they have come to have faith in God, and in that sense they pay tribute to Zion. Maybe not literally, but in a sense they do. Now, chapter 19 starts off in the first 15 verses with an oracle against Egypt. And what's going to happen to Egypt? First of all, we see in the first four verses, 1-4, that there's going to be confusion in the society of Egypt because they are not with the Lord. All right? It says, look, Yahweh rides on a swift cloud. So here's the Lord coming on a cloud. Just coming right down. And he comes down on this cloud, just like we see in Psalm 18. And he comes into Egypt. And the idols of Egypt shall be shaken. They'll be quaking and quivering and trembling at the presence of the Lord. Just like happened when the Lord's Ark of the Covenant went to the Philistine cities and their idols fell down on the ground. So will the Egyptian idols shake and tremble. And the heart of Egypt shall melt inside. Because I will get Egypt to spur against Egypt. That is, I will have revolution inside Egypt. And that they will have brother fighting against brother, everyone against his neighbor, city against city, and kingdom against kingdom. And the spirit of Egypt will be made empty within it. That the Lord will bring confusion on them as punishment for them. We're looking at the words of the prophet Isaiah against Egypt. All right? Now, we saw how in chapter 19, the first four verses, the Lord threatens to bring confusion into Egyptian society and civil war, cities fighting each other. And he's going to empty them of their own spirit. But he's not going to stop there. He says, as we take a look in verses 5 through 10, it says, that the waters shall fail from the sea and the rivers shall be drained dry. And why does he call it a sea? What does he mean there? Well, the sea refers to the Nile when it floods. Because when the Nile floods, the whole country of Egypt is covered with water through the whole Nile Valley. And the Nile Valley is the whole country of Egypt. That's all that country is. And so that becomes like a sea at flood time and then a regular river in the dry season. And what's going to happen is that the Nile will dry up. The Lord will control that. And one of the things that we see throughout the ancient world is that a strong God is one who can control the waters of the earth, because water was seen as a symbol of chaos. As a matter of fact, even the whole Nile River was called Rahav, which is a name in Hebrew for a sea monster. And the Lord controls it and He dries it up. And when that happens, the rivers will become foul, the streams dried up and small, and all the reeds and the different kinds of reeds, the papyrus, will all dry up. And there will be no fishing, there will be no farming, there will be no Egypt. None at all. No Nile, no Egypt. That's the way it goes. Because otherwise, Egypt would be a complete desert. And so the Lord is going to dry them up entirely on the day of the Lord. Not only that, in verses 11 through 15, we see how all of a sudden one of the most important parts of Egyptian culture is going to fail them. That is, Egyptian wisdom is going to fail in verses 11 through 15. Now, Egypt was famous for its wisdom, so much so that Egyptian books of wisdom are quoted in the Bible. Did you know that? Psalm 104 is based on an Egyptian psalm. It was changed, and some of the name of God was changed, and some other things. But they took an Egyptian poem, put it right there, made it a Hebrew psalm. It was so good. And then they took another Egyptian book of wisdom, the sayings of Amenemope. If you can spell that right and send it into the network, I'll send you a free tape of Mother Angelica's, okay? Without cheating. Don't look in the dictionary, all right? Well, anyway, the sayings of Amenemope also are found in the book of Proverbs. It was so good. It was such a great, great book of wisdom. The Egyptians, you know, were included in the Bible. And now, what does the prophet Isaiah say to these wise Egyptians who have all these great books and everything? The princes of Zoan are utter fools, they're complete fools. Now, Zoan is the Hebrew name for Tanis. Tanis used to be one of the capitals of Egypt, way back from around, about 2600 BC, okay? And it was a famous city and capital right south of the Delta region of the Nile. And those princes are going to fail. And the wise counselors of Pharaoh are going to give stupid counsel, just like they did in the time of Moses, when Aaron and Moses fought against them. How can you say to your Pharaoh, "I am the son of the sages, the son of ancient kings"? If you're so smart, if you think you're such a wise guy, you better look again, because you wise guys from Egypt are going to be nothing and nobody when the Lord gets through with you. So where are your wise men? Where are they now? Let them tell you about this now. Let them know what Yahweh of hosts has planned for Egypt. See, that's what the wise people didn't understand. That Yahweh, the God of Israel, and the Lord of the whole world, not just of Israel, but the whole world, He has a plan for Egypt. And the wise people are failures because they don't understand what the Lord has in mind. They just have their own little wisdom. And what's the Lord's plan? That the princes of Noph, that is Memphis, not Memphis, Tennessee, where the blues come from, no, they're going to have their own kind of Egyptian blues in Memphis, Egypt. That's where the original Memphis was. And the princes of Zoan are fools, again, Tanis, because they've caused Egypt to go astray, and they're supposed to be the leaders of the tribes of Egypt. Okay? So they were fools in getting the Egyptians to revolt against the Assyrians. And as a matter of fact, in the 670s, about good 10-15 years after Isaiah is finished prophesying, then the Assyrians will come down and destroy Egypt and take it and destroy these cities. So the Lord gives her a spirit of dizziness and caused Egypt to stagger like a drunk man is caused to wander around in his own vomit. Yucko. That is nasty. It's bad enough when a drunk throws up, but then if he goes stepping in and everything else, that's what he says the Egyptians are going to be like on the day of the Lord, because they're so stupid. All right? And there won't be any help for them at all, because even the head and the tail and the branch and the rush are going to do the same. That is, the leaders and the followers, that's the head and the tail, and the big people, the princes, and the little folks, the commoners, that's the palm tree and the rush. But then we see a change. We see that Isaiah also gives some more oracles for Egypt. He gives five of them. In chapter 19, verses 16 to 25, five oracles for Egypt. And they're all about the day of the Lord. As a matter of fact, they all start off, Bayom Hahu, on that day, Egypt shall be like women, trembling and fearing because of the shaking of Yahweh of hosts, which he shakes over it. Now again, we've seen this before. Isaiah is no woman's liver. Alright? He's not going to be talking about that at all. And he talks about women as being frightened and scared. Alright, that's his image. He said, that's the way all of Egypt is going to be on the day of the Lord. And that Judah is going to terrorize Egypt. You know something that's going on right now? I don't know that that's an exact fulfillment of this prophecy, because I think he was talking about his own time, but Israel, that everybody believes, has an atom bomb. And now Egypt has a dam in the Nile River, right? The Aswan Dam. All it would take is for Israel to drop one atom bomb on top of that dam, and the whole of Egypt is going to be wiped out. It's no wonder that they became friends with Judah all of a sudden after the Israelites got the atom bomb. All right, that'd make me be friendly too. Well, that's something that's prophesied here. Maybe not in exactly those terms and about these days, but that there's a saying that Judah will terrorize Egypt. And maybe from that fear of Judah, Egypt will also learn fear of the Lord. We're looking at Isaiah's words to Egypt, okay? And we've seen how he already said on the day of the Lord, that far distant day, that Israel will terrorize the country of Egypt, okay? Now, that day of the Lord is still off in the future, but maybe from that terror they'll learn fear of the Lord too. And that's what he leads to in the next of these oracles about Egypt on the day of the Lord. What's going to happen to Egypt on the day of the Lord? And these are some of the most amazing oracles in the book of the prophet Isaiah, if you ask me. Because he says, on that day there'll be about five cities in the land of Egypt that speak the language of Canaan and swear to Yahweh of hosts. No, and one shall be called the city of destruction. Now, a lot of stuff going on there. Okay, first of all, these five cities, that's sort of a round number, saying, oh yeah, a whole bunch are going to speak Hebrew, the language of Canaan. And why Hebrew? Because that's the language you pray in, the language that you speak to God in. Though, I'll tell you something, Jews in Israel say, God may write the Bible in Hebrew, and he writes in Hebrew, but he speaks Yiddish, because it's a language for more words and more expression. But, well, I don't know what God speaks exactly, but at any rate, he understands Hebrew, and you worship God in Hebrew. In other words, Egypt will come to understand and worship God in the right language for worship. Okay? And then they'll swear to Yahweh of hosts, the Lord. Okay? And one city will be called destruction. Now, the word destruction, heres, is spelled with just, if you have just 1/16 of an inch of black on one of the letters, it becomes heres, which means Heliopolis, which is a city of Egypt. The city of the sun is what it's called. Now, did somebody make a mistake? Well, we don't know, but it's perhaps one of the cities will be called the city of destruction for some sort of judgment. We're not really positive. But at any rate, the Egyptians will be worshiping the Lord in the language of worship that is in Hebrew. So the rest of you, get your Hebrew grammar books out there and join those Egyptians. At any rate, we see the third one of these oracles of the day of the Lord in verses 19 through 22. And this is also amazing. On that day, there shall be an altar to Yahweh in Egypt, and a pillar on the border of Egypt, a pillar to Yahweh, a memorial pillar. Now, altars and pillars were something that were made in the time of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. These were signs of places to worship the Lord in the times of the patriarchs. And with Isaiah seems to be saying here is that there will be something like a period of the patriarchs before the Egyptians. Israel had its time of being like the patriarchs, wandering around, getting to know the Lord. They'd sort of, you know, do that song, getting to know you, getting to know all about you. Well, that's what they're going to do with the Lord, okay? And that very basic early level of having an altar and a pillar in Egypt. And as a matter of fact, there was an altar built in Egypt around the year 600 by a group of Israelites that settled at Elephantine, an island in the south part of the Nile River. Well, at any rate, that the Lord will make himself known to Egypt like he did for Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. And that they shall worship and sacrifice and give offering and give vows to Yahweh. And they shall perform it. In other words, they are going to become faithful in worship. Not just know the language of worship, Hebrew, but they'll do the actions of worship. And they'll even make vows and keep those vows to the Lord. They'll be faithful. And Yahweh will smite Egypt, and they'll smite and heal. And they shall return to Yahweh, and he will be entreated by them, and he will heal them. In other words, you know, one of the things that my father would say to me after I'd done something wrong, he said, you know, I'm only going to spank you because I love you. Oi, I'm glad he didn't hate me, okay? I didn't like to get spanked at all. But my father would do it because he loved me, all right? Now, that's right out of the Bible. I didn't know that at the time, but in the book of Proverbs, it says that a father who loves his son will spank them. And the Lord says the same thing. I love Israel, so I'm going to spank them. But now, he's going to give that same kind of love, tough love, a love that corrects and smites and spanks until they become holy and righteous. That's what the Lord says he's going to do for Egypt. Just like he did for Israel, and they learned their lesson, on the day of the Lord, Egypt will also experience God's chastisement and healing through chastisement. Now, when the Lord says that he's going to smite them, one of the things that, you know, we might have a difficulty in learning is how good that is to experience God's punishment so that he can heal us of wrongdoing. See, we don't really want to get rid of wrong stuff. But that's the way the Lord is going to take care of us and correct us. And he'll do that for Egypt. That threat of punishment and healing is a hope for Egypt, not a condemnation. And perhaps we can see the same thing for ourselves in the Lord's correction of our behavior, that that's something that we can hope for. I don't like it. I got to admit, I don't like when the Lord corrects me. But it's good. Well, let's turn to verse 23, and we get to some, again, amazing texts. Verse 23 is another. On that day there'll be a highway from Egypt to Assyria, and they'll come back and forth, and they'll worship with each other and visit each other. And that highway between Assyria and Egypt goes right through Israel. So there's going to be peace between the two great empires someday, on the day of the Lord. He's going to bring about peace. Wouldn't it be wonderful for the Lord to bring about peace in the Middle East? He's the only one who can do it. Right now, we know how difficult the Middle East is, and the Lord is going to be the one to bring peace there. Wow, that'd be great. Then finally, in verse 24 and 25, on that day, Israel shall be one-third with Egypt and Assyria, a blessing in the midst of the earth. For Yahweh of hosts has blessed him and said, blessed be Egypt, my people, and Assyria, the work of my hands, and Israel, my heritage. Can you imagine that? That Israel is being told by one of their own prophets that the people of Assyria, who were attacking them and destroying their kingdom, are going to be one part of the people of God. And the people of Egypt are being said to be my people, the people of the Lord, and they're going to worship with Israel. And together, they're going to form one people. That's like as if the Lord was to say to us Americans, or perhaps even better yet, to the people of Poland, that you will be one people with the Germans and the Russians, the ones who have attacked you this century back and forth, and you will be one people who worship God together. Wouldn't that be wonderful to hear? That's exactly Israel's position. And then finally, in chapter 20, we see that Isaiah walks around naked, walks around in his underwear for about 3 years. So here's old Isaiah in his Hebrew BVDs. And he's running around saying, look, Egypt, if you don't stop revolting, you're going to run around in your BVDs, not because God told you, but because the Assyrians are going to take your clothes away from you, and you're going to be slaves. So don't revolt against them and obey God. Now, that's the same for us. We have to be obedient to the Lord and trust Him to bring peace in our world today. God bless you.